We're here on Daf Chesamid Aleph. Most of what we're going to do this morning is from the sheets that I photocopied for you, but before we do that, let's spend 5 minutes just reading two or three lines in the Gemara and two or three lines in Tosfos. So on Daf Chesamid Aleph, towards the bottom of the Amud, the Gemara discusses the question of how many judges we need for a Bezdin for Motzi Shemra. And the Mishnah had recorded a machlokus between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir says that Motzi Shemra requires nothing more than a Bezdin of 3 judges. The Chachamim, on the other hand, require a Bezdin of 23 judges. And the Gemara tries to analyze what are they arguing about. And the Gemara quotes Ula. And this you'll see if you count up 4 lines before the end of Chesamid Aleph. Omar Ula bechoshishin lelaz kamiflagi. They're arguing about the question of laz. We identify laz as kol, as a bad rumor. And the question is, do we have to assume that there's some truth to this bad rumor that's being spread about this woman to the effect that she had an illicit relationship during the 12 months of Erusin, and therefore witnesses will come in and testify that we're dealing with a capital crime. We're not just dealing with a question of monetary payment. That's if you hold chayshin and lalaz. And therefore we expect, or at least we suspect, I don't know what the percentage points are, but there's a good statistical probability that edim, that witnesses will come into this bezdin. So we don't want to have to start running around for, you know, to beef up the court and get up from 3 judges to 23 judges. We don't want to start the session, you know, the initial session of bezdin with 3 judges, because they won't be able to judge dini nefashos. And we're worried about the possibility that witnesses will come to testify. And you know what might happen? Perhaps in the shuffle, the bezdin of 3 judges will decide the case on a monetary level, and they're going to drop the ball. And they're not going to even bother convening to get together 23 judges to fulfill their obligation of ubi'arta hara mikirbecha, in event that 2 witnesses come in and testify that she was guilty of this capital crime. And therefore, what we have to worry about is the possibility that somehow this case will fall between the cracks. You know, they'll start with 3 judges, and they'll assume that it's enough to have 3 judges, when in fact we need 23 judges. Now, Tosis Divra Maskel Motzi Shemra says Pirish Bakuntris. So he's going to start with Rashi. He's going to ask a number of questions and raise another objections against Rashi, until finally he's going to quote, which is about 2/3 of the way down in this Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam, Mefarish Rabbeinu Tam. Now, Rashi says, and you'll see it quoted in Tosfos, just because time is limited, I'm using Tosfos as a shortcut to understand Rashi. Pirish Bekuntris, Shabal Toin Pesach Patsuach Mat. Pesach pasuach matzasi lafsidak subasa. In other words, according to Rashi, initially, when Bezdin convenes to deal with his claim, and according to Rabbi Meir, all we need is 3 judges, the Rabbanan also would agree that we don't need more than 3 judges, except for the possibility that Edom will come in. But as long as the Edom don't come in, all we really need, Me'ikar Adin, even according to the Chachamim, is 3 judges, says Rashi, because the whole deal, the whole discussion here, is about Haksuba. She was married Becheskas Besula, hence the Ksuba was Masayim Zuz, which is an awesome sum of money. And he claims that he was fooled, that he found her to be a Ba'ula, and he doesn't want to pay the Ksuba, because the entire Ischaivus, his commitment to the Ksuba, was based on a mistake. He was fooled. It's kind of like if you go into a store and you order Chitim and they deliver you Siorim, Well, Chitim and Siorim are two separate entities. I didn't bargain for Siorim, I bargained for Chitim. That's called a Mekach Tos. Here too, he's claiming he bargained for a Basul. He found it to be a Ba'ula. He was Mischayev to a Ksuba of a Basula Masayim Zuz. He was fooled. And the reason why Tosfos Rabbeinu Tam rejects Rashi is because this Mishnah of Motzi Shemra is placed together with other cases of Knas. For example, Ones Umefata. So let's just quickly take a look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says the following. The Mishnah says on the third line, in the big lines in the Mishnah, Ones Umefata, Ve'a Motzi Shemra, etc. In one breath, the Mishnah presents both the cases of Ones Umefata and the case of Motzi Shemra. Ones Umefata is a discussion about Knas, which means the extra penalty that he has to pay above and beyond compensation for any loss that she suffered in the cases of Ones and Mefata. Now, it would seem, therefore, that Motzi Shemra, likewise, should be a discussion about Knas. Otherwise, why did the Mishnah formulate them all together in one breath? Whereas, according to Rashi, the debate between the husband and the wife here, the issue on the table for the judges is not Knas, but rather Ksuba. Ksuba is a chiyuv mamon like any other chiyuv mamon. It's not a knas. And furthermore, Tosfos says that in a sense Rashi is steering us off the main path. The main path of Motzi Shemra, wherever you find it, and you'll see it over and over again in Mishnayos and in Gemaras, it's always an issue about knas. Namely, he claims that she had this relationship during the 12-month period of time, and now he is fabricating the truth. As a result, there's a libel. He is falsifying. He is slandering her. As a result of the slander, the Torah says he has to pay her mea kesef, mea slayim. He has to pay a fine. In any event, without going through all the objections of Tosfos, let's just get to Rabbeinu Tam himself. And this you'll see about 10 lines, maybe 15 lines up before the end of the Tosfos. Umefarish Rabbeinu Tam, de kula shmaitita, the entire sugya Iri is discussing the case of kuf slayim, which means that the father claims that this baal has slandered his daughter, and therefore, right, she's a nara, so the father represents the daughter. And if we assume, like the chachamim, the choshin lelaz, which means that we have to worry about the dayonim, and there might be a laz here. There's a laz la dayonim. Kigon, what's the case? Shehevi abal edim shezinsa. Now again, if the baal claimed that there was, that he had, you know, kosher reliable edim that could testify that in the last 12 months she engaged in this illicit relationship with another man, then ostensibly, we're not talking about Motzi Shemra. His claim is backed up by two witnesses. So Rabbeinu Tam now has to ask himself the following question. Why is he paying kuf slayim, if he's found to be guilty of slander, if his claim is supported by two witnesses? So to answer that question, Rabbeinu Tam adds one important word here, vehukrishu, which means that another pair of edim came in and testified that these first two edim are not telling the truth. That these two edim, who claim that they saw a be'ila on such a date, they're lying. They're falsifying the truth. And in such a case of a hukrishu, mechayev habal, the baal now is guilty of slander because his witnesses are disqualified, and therefore he has to pay kuf slayim. He has to pay 100 slayim. Rabbanan Savri Boich of Gimel. We need 23 judges. Why? To Ibn Gimel, if we start with three judges, Chayshini, we have to be afraid. Shema Achakach Yovo Edim Shezinsa. Maybe two witnesses will come, and then they have to add another 20 judges to beef up the court to 23 judges. V'asi Lahotzi Las Al Rishonim. People think that why is it that they added another 20 judges to the bench. Lomar, and they'll say the following, Shalafish lo yadu ladun, that these judges were ignorant. Apparently, this was a problem back in the day, that people would have contempt of court because they felt that the judges were not really reliable. Here's proof positive. I'll prove to you that the judges are not reliable. The fact that they had to add so many judges to the court is therefore, in this case, we're going to require that the initial Beis Din will be made up of 23 judges, and therefore we'll circumvent the need to add judges. Says Rabbeinu Tam, v'dafka hukrishu. When are we afraid that another pair of Eidim might come in? After all, what happened here? The Baal brought two Eidim, and then there was akhosha. Those Eidim were contradicted. As a result, we threw out the first pair of Eidim. And then we're ready to judge for 100 asloim, a monetary case, right? That he should pay the knas of Motzi Shema because his witnesses were disqualified. And he's therefore guilty of slander. Now, the Rabbanan are saying, no, we're going to retain and maintain the original 23 judges, because if we let these judges go, then if in event that two Eidim will come in to testify on his behalf that she had this Maisa's Nus, then we're dealing with a capital case. And therefore, let's consider the possibility that another two Eidim will come in. This is the third pair of Eidim, right? The first pair of Eidim supported the Baal's claim. They were contradicted by the second pair of Eidim. That's called Akhosha. Now we have to worry about a third pair of Eidim that would come in and again testify that she had Znus. Says Rabbeinu Tam, because of that chashash, which requires the Chachamim to, in their opinion, to maintain the court as a 23-member court, only in the case of Hukrishu, if the second pair of Eidim were Machish, the first pair of Eidim, Aval Huzmu, if the second pair of Eidim, instead of contradicting the first pair of Eidim and saying that this Be'ilah didn't take place, this Znus never took place, they claim, well, you couldn't have possibly, they're turning to the first pair of Eidim, have been there to testify, to witness, because you were with us in a different place. That's called Imanu Ayisa. In such a case, Sulo Chayshida, we don't furthermore worry, subsequently, with Sadi Achrini, that another pair of Eidim will come in. Why? The Muchachab Milsa, it's absolutely clear, it's certain beyond the shadow of a doubt, the Aside Shakri, that the original two witnesses which were brought in by the Baal they perjured themselves, because in the case of Azom we believe the second pair of Eidim who say Imanu Ayisem. So this Baal is looking for false witnesses. Haraya, he brought in false witnesses. Avavavukhishu, in a case where they were contradicted, and the second pair of Eidim didn't say Imanu Ayisem, but they just said that we were there and we saw that there was no Be'ila. Olo kivnu edusam, or for example, we interrogated the first pair of Eidim that the Baal brought in, and we found that there was a discrepancy between one aid and another. Is akati efsha, maybe they weren't lying. Efsha lios dekushtahavi kamei, what they were saying was true. And therefore, even though this pair of Eidim did not succeed, because they were subject to Akhosha or Lokivnu Eidusam, maybe a subsequent pair of Eidim will come in and testify and will accept their testimony. They'll be reliable witnesses to the effect that she had this Nus. The very fact that the first pair of Eidim were never established to be perjurers, but to be liars, And the Baal therefore brought Eidim, then there is a serious chashash, a statistical probability, I don't mean probability that's more than 50%, but a serious statistical probability that a second pair of Eidim will come in and testify. Now, there's a basic problem with Rabbeinu Tam, a really serious problem, which you're going to see here in these pages. I don't know if you have page Sadi Aleph. If you do, it's on the bottom left. If you don't, we're going to just summarize a few lines on Sadi Aleph, and we're going to go on to the main thrust of what we want to study today, which is on Sadi Beis. So on Tzadi Aleph, most of what we have to read here is just a summary of what we saw in Rabbeinu Tam in Tosfos, that the original diun, the original debate here in front of the Beis Din, was about Kuf Slon, whether or not the claim of the father that this man is slandering his daughter is a true claim, and the husband to support his claim brings in two witnesses that testify that she had znus for hukrishu. And in such a case, Rabbeinu Tam says that the Baal has to pay 100 kesef, 100 sloin. Right? Let's just underline a few words in Tosfos that we just read. The hukrishu, you remember that word, the hukrishu, and then it says the mechayv habal hashta kuf sloim. After that kosha, the Baal has to pay 100 sloim. And for, in such a case, Rabbi Meir's right, we're only dealing with dini mamonos, so we can, any judges that were there, a surplus of judges above beyond three, we can let them go, and we'll make this decision on a monetary basis that the Baal indeed has to pay kuf sloim. Because the witnesses that he brought into Beis Din, hukhishu, they were contradicted. Hence, he doesn't have witnesses to support his claim. He has to pay 100 sloim. And then Rabbeinu Tam, behemshech, he gives another possibility. Why do we not rely on the first two eidim? Because lo kivnu eidusam, because there was some sort of discrepancy that came to light as a result of the investigations and the drishas and chakiris. Now, Rabbeinu Tam admits that according to Chacham, the reason why Choshishin Lelaz, the reason why we have to worry about the possibility that we need 23 judges is because we never disproved the first pair of Eidim. Because all we have is Hakosha. In the case of Azoma, then we throw out the first pair of Eidim. We know that they were lying. That the Torah says we rely on the Mazimin. And therefore, we're not going to assume that this Baal is going to successfully bring in two Eidim. We're going to shoot down any Eidim that he can because we know he's looking for perjury. But in the case of Hakosha, Rabbeinu Tam says, there may very well be, and there's a high percentage of suspicion, that there will be two Eidim that will successfully testify that she had znus. So the Ran asks the following kasha, Im hukhishu ha'edim, in other words, the Baal had two Eidim that testified that she had znus, but now two Eidim said that on that day she was with us, so she couldn't have possibly had this news. Is Bechai Gavna, in such a scenario, how could we force the Baal to pay 100 kesef, which is what the father is demanding? We have shtei kite edim ha-machishim zetze. We have two sets of witnesses that contradict each other. In other words, the first set of witnesses says that we saw her, you know, have this relationship, in Coney Island, you know, under the boardwalk, and now two pair of Adam say, well, that woman was with us at that time in Astoria, Queens, you know, at the same time, the same night. So that's called Akhasha. Who do we believe in such a case? No clue. Flip a coin. Do we believe the first pair of Adam, they saw her there at that time and she had znus? Do we believe the second pair of Adam that she was with us in a different place at that time and she didn't have znus? So we don't know who's telling the truth. That's called trey trey. In such a case, we have a suffix, we have a doubt. The Baal is still claiming that his witnesses were telling the truth. And there's no reason why he should be accused and found guilty of slander, and he should be obligated to pay mea kesef. Why does Rabbeinu Tam assume that even in the case of Akosha, where we don't know whom to believe, yet nevertheless Rabbeinu Tam says he has to pay mea kesef? It's a pella of Rabbeinu Tam. And again, you may say, well, maybe he is a Motzi Shemra and the whole thing is false. Well, I'm going to say maybe he's not a Motzi Shemra and the whole thing is true. So what are we left with? A Suffolk. Trey is always a Suffolk. We don't know. In the case of a Suffolk, a Motzi Mechavel of a Rai, you can't force a person to pay a penalty, a steep, heavy penalty of 100 sloim based on a Suffolk. What does Rabbeinu Tam mean when he says, again, we'll read that key line, V'huchshu u'machayev ha'bal hashta kuf sloim, when Rabbeinu Tam himself agrees that we don't know who's telling the truth in the case of Akosha, and that's why the Chachom are very seriously worried about the possible scenario of two witnesses coming in to support the Baal, because we never disproved the first two witnesses of the Baal. Pell of Rabbeinu Tam. At this point on Daf Tzadi Beis, we're going to look at the Rambam in the third parak of Nair Besula. Ketzad Hotzah Shemra. What is Hotzah Shemra? Im Hevi Av Edim V'Zimu HaEdim Shehevi Baal. There are two pairs of Edim. The first pair was brought by the Baal. The second pair was brought by the Av. And they were Mazim, the first pair of Edim. They said, Imanu Ayisem, you couldn't have witnessed this crime because you were with us in Astoria, Queens, on that night. Nimtzu Sheheidu Sheker. As a result of Hazoma, we absolutely ascertain that the two witnesses that were brought by the Baal plagiarized themselves. In such a case, is Yiskalu, Yiskalu means we give the Edom Skila, that's under the law of Kasha Zoma. V'yilkehu v'yite me'asela. So again, it's clear that the Rambam is saying that under what circumstances do we obligate, do we impose this fine on the Baal as a Motzi Shemra of me'asela? That's only because his Edom were what? Zomamim. The Rambam repeats himself in the same parak. He says, "V'chein zesh yomer ha'av v'ele besule biti." If the father produces the sheets that have blood on it, and he says, "These are her besule," and zomemei ede abal, and they were, and there was a hazoma to the witnesses of the Baal. So we now have the Rambam twice repeating the same theme that in order to establish a Baal who says, I found it to be a Ba'ula as a Motzi Shemra and force him to pay Me'a Kesef, it's got to be that his Edim was subject to Hazoma. It therefore says the Minchas Chinuch, Nire Desvile La Rama, the Dafka Huzmu, Aval Hukhishu, if the second pair of Edim brought in by the father contradict the first pair, but they don't say Mono Aisa, they say she was with us, or the Boel was with us, is Eino Lokav, Eino Nosein Mea Sel. Why? Because my chaz to some chazahani smokahani. Why do you assume that we should rely on this pair of Edim? Why not rely on that pair of Edim? In other words, you're going to rely on the Makrishin, the second pair of Edim brought by the Av, there's no reason to do so. For the same token, and by the same logic, I should rely on the Edim that were brought by the Av. Avol says the Michas Chinuch Lidas Remeinatam, quoted in our Tosus, Hukrishu Edim Nami. Even in that case, no sein abal me'asela. So we see clearly that the Minchas Chinuch is reading the Rabbeinu Tam the same way we're reading Rabbeinu Tam, but what he adds into the equation is the quote of the Rambam, that the Rambam holds over and over again that the Motzi Shemra Mea Kesef, Mea Sela, is a result of Hazama, not a result of Akasha, because in Akasha it's my Chazis. Who do you rely on? So you're going to make him pay Mea Sela because maybe the second pair of Edim, those that are brought by the Av, are telling the truth. I'm going to counter argue. Maybe the Edim that were brought by the Baal, maybe they were telling the truth. And Rabbi Nitam holds that even in the case of Hukrishu. Now Tosfos on Daf Tesom and Beis, we're of course here on Daf Chesom and Aleph, but there's a Tosfos later on that writes that Rabbi Nitam is talking about a case of Hikrishu Edei Ha'av Hakrasha Gemura. Interesting. Tosis, in quoting Rabbeinu Tam, later on in Daf Tes, has a phrase here, introduced a brand new phrase that we're not familiar with, called Hakrasha Gemura. In other words, the two pairs, the two witnesses that were brought in by the father, their Hakrasha was a Hakrasha Gemura. What does that mean? It seems to indicate that the witnesses that were subpoenaed by the father testify that she didn't have znus, and even in such a case, the Baal has to pay Me'a Kesef. In other words, once again, what we saw in the Minchas Chinuch and what we thought was intuitively was the interpretation of Rabbeinu Tam is explicit in the Tosfos quoting Rabbeinu Tam and Daf Tes Amud Beis, that we're talking about a case of Akasha Gemura, which means that the father is bringing Edim that she didn't have znus, And the first pair of Eidim testify, those who were brought by the Baal, that she did have snus. So what do you do in this case? You don't know what to do in this case. Who do you believe? There's no Azama here. It's only Akhasha. And yet, Tosus quotes from Eidim Tam, as his opinion is that the Baal in this case has to pay Me'er Keser. The Rama makes a heck of a lot more sense, because in Tosus' frame of reference, why should he pay Me'er Slaim when we have no clear-cut proof that he was lying or that his Eidim were lying? It's quite possible that his Eidim were telling the truth or the Eidim Ahav were lying. We don't know. So that's the question that we have to figure out. What do you say?
No.
Yeah, you hear the question. I mean, the whole balance of this article is to try to make sense out of Rabbeinu Tam.
Well, and the doubt is, from what I hear you, is that you need 23 because there is a doubt. And it could be true.
Correct.
Therefore, you can't take a chance just because there is a doubt and it could be a capital crime.
Well, that's the reason why we need 23 judges.
Exactly.
But the very fact that we really are serious about anticipating the possibility that another pair of Eidim are going to come in and testify that she had znus is because we don't really know who's telling the truth between the first two pairs of Eidim. It's very possible the first pair of Eidim brought by the Baal are telling the truth. It's Akasha, my chazes. And therefore we suspect that more Eidim are going to come, hence we have to make sure that we maintain a bezdin of 23 judges. But the main question is about the Ma'a Kesef, about the Be'er Ma'a Kesef, the Slaim. I mean, why does Rabbeinu Tam insist that once we were makish his Eidim, the Baal's Eidim, he has to pay Me'er Kesef? Why can't he claim and be justified in his claim that the Eidim are telling the truth? Either was Akash. That's because the second pair of Eidim were perjuring themselves. Why do we have more of a reason to tip the scale in favor of believing the second pair of Eidim over the first pair of Eidim? That's what I call my chazus. And basically, you're left in an absolute suffix, a 50-50 doubt, and now you're going to tell the Baal under those circumstances that has to pay mass loan? Very difficult. Honestly, Rav Osai, I wouldn't even have a clue where to begin with this Rabbeinu Tam. It's a mind-boggling Rabbeinu Tam, and it's not that the Gevurah Yitzchok is creating the problem. I mean, the problem has been raised by the Mefarshim, but he wants to take a stab at this gigantic mountain. You know, climbing this glacier. I still remember that picture you sent me. And I don't know if you remember my response, just don't go too close to the end.
Is it because the burden of proof is on
the father? Do you follow?
It's the other way around. The burden of proof is on the husband to prove the father is wrong.
Well, wait a second. It depends. If we're talking about Me'er Slaim, then the burden of proof is on the father, right? Because the father is the one who wants to collect Me'er Slaim. He's schlepping his son-in-law, if you want to call it that, into Beis Din to sue him for 100 slot, correct?
Right.
Is that mine? No. Okay.
Because I
shut mine off. It's the exact same Megan, that's right.
Well, because the husband claimed that she had an affair. And so therefore, he's saying, so the husband has to prove that there was an affair.
Correct.
And that's why the father came in. So now, that's what I'm saying, the burden of proof lies with the husband.
The husband failed at this point. His efforts were aborted. And there's no proof that she had this affair. But now the father turns around and says, well, you accused my daughter of having this affair, and now you're in a libel situation. You falsely accused her of a crime that she never committed. And therefore the Torah says you have to pay me Me'er Slaim. Well, how do you know he falsely accused her? Maybe he truthfully accused her. Maybe she really did commit this crime. We really don't know. We have a case of trade, two Eidim against two Eidim. So you're going to force the Baal to write out a check for Me'er Slaim when he's claiming, and he's still claiming, as we stand, he's claiming that he's telling the truth that she did in fact have this affair.
I'm just trying to figure out the logic here.
I think it's, again, I don't know how to figure out the logic of Rabbeinu Tam, but I can figure out the logic of the opposition against Rabbeinu Tam.
Sure.
In other words, the Rambam is not going to at all tolerate Rabbeinu Tam, because how can you force a person to pay money when we're in a trade situation? We never find that in trade, somebody has to pay money. Let's say, for example, you sue me for $1,000, mm-hmm. and you invoke the testimony of two witnesses. Now, I bring two witnesses that say that your two witnesses are lying, they're perjuring themselves. Do I have to pay the thousand? For sure not. That's called a motzi mechavel of raya. In other words, you haven't proven that your witnesses are correct. I don't know if my witness is right. I can't prove that my witness is correct. We're left with a suffix. In doubt, you can't force a person to make money because the burden of proof is on you.
Well, mine is a reaction to you claiming something else.
Okay,
so that's you started the whole thing, and you're the one that has the burden of proof because you're the one that started the whole thing with the original accusation.
True, but again, that doesn't just justify why he has to pay Meir Kesef when he might be telling the truth.
Okay.
All right, let's see. Maybe your answer will be helpful. Let's start with a very, very famous and profound sugya of Trei U'Trei. Where is the sugya of Trei U'Trei? It's in the third parak of Bava Basra, which is called Cheskes Abate. An amazingly powerful parak. I mean, anyone who wants to know anything about Dini Momenus should be very, very much recommended to study that chapter. And one of the big sugyas in that chapter is the sugya of Trei U'Trei. And that's going to be a machlokes between Rav Huna and Rav Chisda. So what happens? There's someone who is, I'm going to use the term, squatting on land, claiming it's his. However, he's not the Marakama, he's not the original owner of the land. The original owner of the land claims that it belongs to him, or he inherited it from his father. So when we come to the squatter and we say to him, what are you doing on this land? Who gave you rights to live in this land? He says that I inherited from my father. So you have now two people, each of whom is claiming that he inherited the land from his father. That's called Zeomer Shalavosai, Vizeomer Shalavosai. Now each one supports his claim with two witnesses. Hi, the first guy says, I see Sadeh bring two witnesses to Avasa, that it belongs to my father, that I inherited this land, you know, legally. I'm the surviving heir. The Ochla Shnei Chazok, and I've been eating the fruits of this land for the last 3 years. Bahai, and the other one, I see Sadi, the Ochla Shnei Chazok. And the other person brings witnesses that he's been eating all these years of Chazok. So who's been living in the field, working the field, harvesting the crop, the produce, and enjoying the benefits of the produce of this field? Well, we have Trei U'Trei. Omer Rav Nachman, Uki Achilu Labadi Achilu V'Uki Ara B'Cheskas Avasa. There was one of these two litigants who not only had witnesses to testify, not only did his witnesses testify to the fact that he's been living in the land and enjoying its produce for the last 3 years, but they also went a step further and they testified that this land belonged to his father. On the other hand, the other guy, the other litigant, he has witnesses that he's been eating the land and enjoying its produce for the last 3 years, but he doesn't have testimony on Avasa. So what does Rav Nachman say over here? We have Trei U'Trei as far as Achila is concerned, and that's going to neutralize Achila. So we're left with nowhere as far as Achila. But we have testimony on Cheskes Avasa, meaning that one of the two litigants inherited this land from his father. Amalei Rava says to him, Ba'edus Mukheshesi. There's no way that you can accept the witnesses who testified that so-and-so inherited this land because those two witnesses also testified that so-and-so was living on the land and eating its produce, and on that edus there was akasha. In other words, Rava says that you either take the entire edus as an enterprise, as one whole indivisible entity, or you drop the edus entirely. Since you cannot accept the edus when they tell you the story of Achila, you cannot accept the edus when they tell you the story of Avisa. Amale, so to this Rav Nachman responds, and he says to Ravina, he this kachish b'achilosa, yeah, I know that it was Akosh as far as Achila is concerned, who actually was enjoying the fruits of this land for the last 3 years. But Biavasan Bi is Kashkesh. No one was arguing against his claim, you know, the testimony of these two Aiden, that this so-and-so inherited from from Avisa, meaning that whereas Rav is not willing to break down the Eidus into two parts, he sees it as one indivisible entity, and once we reject part of the Eidus, we have to reject the entire Eidus. However, according to Rav Nachman, no, I can break down the Eidus into its component parts. There's one part of the Eidus that deals with Achila, the other part with Avasa, and even if there's Akrasha on the Achila, I can still accept the Eidus as far as Avasa is concerned. So the Gemara says, you know what the root of this machlokus is? Lema Rava Rav Nachman bepluta de Rav Huna Rav Chizda kamifliki. This is really just an application, or shall we say a repeat performance of an ancient machlokus, of the original machlokus between Rav Huna and Rav Chizda. Di Itmar, Shnei Kite Eidim HaMachisho Zu Etzu. Two pairs of Eidim that contradict each other. Omer Rav Huna, Zu Bav Ifnei Atzmu Me'ida V'Zu Bav Ifnei Atzmu Me'ida. The machlokus here between Rav Huna and Rav Chizda addresses the following question. When you have Eidus Mukheshes, can each pair of Eidim separately testify henceforth from now on? After all, each pair of Eidim is a suffek whether he perjured himself. An Eid, once a witness perjures himself, he's possibly disqualified for Eidus henceforth. Comes along Rav Huna, and he says, you know what, we don't know which of these two pairs of Eidim is lying, right, perjured itself, and therefore let them be kosher. From now on, henceforth, we're going to be kosher. In other words, Rav Huna is going to maintain that in the case of Eidus Mukheshes, we have a suffek, and we have something called a chazaka. The chazaka means that until you know for sure the situation has changed, the status is assumed to be the same. These Eidim, all four of them, each pair, have a cheskas kashrus, and we're not going to apostle them and disqualify them based on a suffek. I'm not going to deal with these Eidim. Both pairs of Eidim are considered Sadi Shakri, considered Eidim that perjured themselves and are henceforth disqualified for testimony. So Lema, let's say the Rav Nachman, the Amar Rav Huna, Rav Nachman who said that we can accept the Eidus as far as Avasa is concerned, because there was no Akrosh on Avasa. He reflects the Shita of Rav Huna, meaning that according to Rav Huna, Zubav if Neatzma Me'ida, Vizubav if Neatzma Me'ida, we maintain the Cheskas Kashus of the Eidus. The Rava, Rav Chizda, Rava who says that we have to throw out the entire Eidus, and we can't believe what they said about Avasa, he holds like Rav Chizda, Bahadi Sadi Shakri Lomali. That once we have Eidus Mukheshes, we don't know which pair of Eidim have perjured themselves, and therefore we're going to throw out these Eidim. We're not going to rely on them, because maybe, perhaps, they perjured themselves. Now, in Bava Basra, especially Cheskes Habatim and on, we don't have Rashi, we have the Rashbam. Now, when we say we don't have Rashi, the manuscripts of Rashi got lost. Chances are very good, I'm just making a comment, that they went up in flames on Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas in the year 1263. I don't know exactly what year it was. You can take a look in the art scroll Kinnis, because he tells you exactly what year it was when St. Louis, I hope you won't be insulted by this, but I call him St. Louis Yimach Shemo. That's how he became a saint, because he had 24 cartloads of manuscripts of Torah, mostly the Talmud, but there were other manuscripts, mostly of Rashi, that went up in smoke. And that really undermined a lot of the Masorah. And we have a kinnah, I think it's called Mi Ten Roshi Mayim, and the kin is all about that one episode and the impact it had on the Masorah. So in any event, getting back to Rashi, we don't have Rashi in Bava Basra, in the third parak of Bava Basra, maybe for the first plot. So we have the Rashbam. And the Rashbam is the substitute for Rashi. Nobody could substitute for Rashi. But the Rashbam tried to do it. And he writes the following. L'Rav Chizda, according to Rav Chizda, who says Ba'adi Sari Shakri Lomali, Lo Ya'idu Shum Eidus Sheba'ola, Anytime one of these two pairs of witnesses comes into Beis Din, we throw them out, so to speak. Why? The only reason we need witnesses is to support the claim of the plaintiff to try to get money out of the defendant. And we have a principle called Uki Mamon Beches Kase. We leave the money in the hands of the Muchsal. Maybe these Edom are psulim. So basically it comes out that the Rashbam is telling us that according to Rav Chisda, and the Gemara identifies Rava with Rav Chisda, and we say that Bahadi Sadi Shakri Lomali, you know, these Edom, either pair, are henceforth meaningless or powerless, I should say. Why are they powerless? Because if we don't know if they're telling the truth, then there's no way we can force the litigant who's being sued here, the defendant, to pay damages. Why should he pay? Maybe these witnesses are falsifying their evidence, or maybe they're liars. So that's the shita of Rav Chisda according to the Rashbam. Hare, what do we see from this? The Sfir Leila Rashbam, Dil Rav Chisda Pas Psulim Rak Misafik. It's crystal clear that according to the Rashbam, the status of these two Edim, in a case of Akrasha, these two pairs of Edim, is equivalent to a Safik. Which again will bring us back to our first point. How could Rabbeinu Tam in our Sugya, here in Masech the Sanhedrin, claim that the Baal is going to have to pay Mea Sloim based on our Akrasha situation when we really are in doubt? Ulam, however, Tosfos, there in Baba Basra, says Vim Toma. Imkena my choshev rava b'maruba u'beperek zeh borer eid zomim chidushu. Right, Rav is famous for saying, well, this is one of the al-kagams that we don't pass like Rav. Rav says that an eid zomim is posel l'mafreya u'nifsal. We pass like Abaye, I think, that mikan l'ava u'nifsal. But Rav says l'mafreya u'nifsal. From the time he gave his testimony, or any testimony subsequent, is thrown out of court. It's disqualified. Because we know that he perjured himself at an earlier date. Oh, I'm sorry. That is Abaye. Yeah, Abaye is the one who says l'mafreya u'gover. Okay. L'mafreya u'nifsal. And Rava says mikan l'ahava u'nifsal. Why is Rava saying mikan l'ahava u'nifsal? So Gemara explains, Rava is saying eid zomim chidushu. Right? Trey, ma'amai samchas ahani smoch ahani. Why do you rely on the mazimim who say that the eid zomim were not with them, were not at the scene of the crime at that time, but they were with us elsewhere? Maybe the first pair of eidim are telling the truth and not the second. Very famous kash. So that kash is asked by Rava, and his conclusion is therefore that eid zomim is a chiddush. And whenever something is a chiddush, we say ein lo ela mishas chiddush ve'eilach. We apply it from that moment and on. So when did he become an eid zomim? When the second pair of eidim testified imanu ayisim, from that time and on he's an eid zomim, and he becomes posel yed. So that's called mikan ulahaba hu nifsal. That's the sheet of Rava based on eid zomim chiddushu. Well, why is eid zomim chiddushu? The truth is, the same thing applies even to Edim HaMachishim Zeretzeh. What's the special chiddush of Edim HaMazimim? You're going to tell me that Edim HaMazimim are believed, and therefore we're going to apostle the first pair of Edim. That's a tremendous chiddush. But chachit should be like trey, and we just finished saying that trey means that from now on, we cannot rely on these Edim, because maybe they perjure themselves. Maybe they're unreliable, and that's the sheet of Rav Chisda. So if we go with Rav Chisda, then what's the difference between Eid Zomim and Eid Mukhash? In both cases, we have to disqualify the Eid. So why do you tell me that Eid Zomim is a Chiddush? Hare, Mashu Nifsal Eino Chiddush, Dom Min Adin, Yehei Lios, it should be equivalent to Shnayim Psulim, like the case of Shnei Kitei Eidim Achishim Zetzeh. In other words, both sets of witnesses should be possible. Now, let's add another element to the equation. We never found that in Edim Zomimim, the second pair of Edim, we'll call them Azimim, are possible. But according to the Rashbam, in interpreting Rav Chisda, we don't know who's telling the truth. then both these pairs of Eidim have to be thrown out of court. We can never rely on them. If that be the case, then Hazom is exactly equivalent to Akhoshe. It came Lo Avi Chiddush. The only Chiddush is that the Mazim Amak Sheir. So now Tosis quotes the Re. The Rava, the Omar Chiddush, Rava there in Perik Meruba, who says that Eidzom is a Chiddush, Lo Avi Ella Lefi Amaskana the Asi Shapir Kiravuna. In other words, we cannot reconcile Rava and Chiddush and Eidim Zomim with Rav Chisda, because Rav Chisda holds Vahari Sari Sharkri lovely. We have to throw out both pairs of Eidim. Well, if that be the case, then if in Achrasha we have to throw both pairs of Eidim out, then in Azom also we have to at least throw out the Eidim Zomim from court. That's not a Chiddush. The answer is that the entire sugya of Rava, which is called Mikanu La'avo Nifsal, and Eidzom is a Chiddush, that stands on the shoulders of Rav Huna, who says Zubav if they atzum idu, and Zubav if they atzum idu. Meaning that each kat remains a Safek. If each kat remains a Safek, therefore Rav Huna says we can rely on that, because Uki Eidim v'cheska say, right? You can't possibly Eidim in a suffix. So the Eidim now have the power and they're qualified to testify in any case, even if it means taking money out of someone's hands and putting it in someone else's hands. Is Mamela, we understand what Chidushu is. So the bottom line of this Tosus in Masechta Baba Basra Perkes Sabatim is that the only way we can appreciate Rava's Chiddushu in the case of Eidim Zomu, if we say that by contrast, in the case of Akasha, we trust both pairs of Eidim henceforth, and no one is possible. Whereas in the case of Eidim Zomu, the Eidim Zomu are possible, we can never trust them, and all the punishments that we have to impose upon. Now, if you'd ask me, am I a happy camper? The answer is no. To say that the entire sugya of Rava in Masechta Bava Kama is predicated on Rav Huna in Masechta Bava Basra, but it's against Rav Chisda, I don't know. That's a little bit upsetting. You know, that's a little bit of an unnerving assumption. So, Bosai, let's stop here. If somebody has a pencil by chance, never mind. I'll just use a pen because I could always replace this. We're up to, on the left column of Tzadik Beis, hopefully we'll finish this tomorrow, Mitzvah Shem, same time, same station, about seven lines down from the top, Ubitosis Bababa Kam. You have that? So again, if I could just ask the Olam if everything that we did today is clear. Again, we haven't yet defended Rabbi Tam, but to understand clearly the machlokes between Rav Huna and Rav Chisda, where Rav Huna says that we can accept both of these Eidim henceforth in the case of Akosha, and Rav Chisda says no, we have to throw out both pairs of the Eidim. Do you have that? Okay, if you have that, then we can pick this up tomorrow. Okay then? If any questions, I'm here. I'm not
so we're stopped by saying one Eidim. You either trust them both or you mistrust them both. And this is
correct. So Rav Huna says we're going to trust them both. Why? Because in a suffix we can't passel Eidim. We have to be mamidem al chizkosom. They were kosher, and until we disprove them, you know, they're innocent until proven guilty. Comes along Rav Chizda, and he says, no, what do I want to deal with these Eidim for? I don't know which one of them perjured themselves, and one of them is certainly possible.
Therefore, they're both guilty.
And they're both, then we can say guilty until proven innocent.
We got one taking the judicial view in the U.S. and we have one taking the IRS view in the U.S.
Oh, really? What's
well, the IRS typically?
Yeah.
IRS.
I'm curious.
You're guilty until you prove yourself innocent. You
really
have to prove to them that they.
If you get audited, is that what you mean?
You're wrong. Ah. Unless you can prove yourself the other way. So the IRS view is you're guilty to prove yourself innocent.
But in a criminal judiciary situation, it's the other way around. We assume that you're innocent unless you're proven guilty, right? That's interesting. I never thought of that.